As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate are you? You call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I? You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did. There was an idea. Bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they can become something more. Like the battles that we never could.
Welcome to Fury's Finest, a podcast about Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name is Jesse Egan, I'm joined by my co-host Chris Bruffett. Chris, how are you feeling today?
I am doing great, Jesse. I am extremely excited to talk a little Doctor Strange with you today, but I'm also excited about MCP, man.
Well, absolutely. And what's pretty cool about the timing of talking about Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, and where we're finishing right now on our show, which is Midnight Suns, and where we're going, which is a lot of this convocation content and other things around this universe. It's just very fun. It's very fun to frame our ideas and thoughts around this. And I'm just so excited to be back in the MCU. We haven't been in the MCU for a minute, and there's been a lot of great content that's come out. But of course, as we mentioned in the last couple episodes, MCP comes first and news comes first and things like that. And so we've had to put these sort of things we really want to talk about, like Doctor Strange and Moon Knight, on hold for a second. And now we're here. And today we are talking about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. That's Doctor Strange 2. And what's, I guess, the crazy part about this, Chris, is Love and Thunder is like happening now. So it's just,
oh,
like,
oh my gosh,
we're getting caught up. Don't worry, we're going to cover it all. But we also wanted everyone at home to have the option to see Doctor Strange before we did our review and our analysis and our discussion. So we think enough time's passed now, so it's an appropriate time to do it. But with that said, I think we got a lot to talk about today, Chris. So before we do that, we should tend to some business real quick.
Fury's Finest is sponsored by DiscountGamesInc.com. Go to DiscountInkGames.com for all your Marvel Crisis Protocol needs.
Our patrons support Fury's Finest at Patreon.com/Fury's Finest. If you enjoy this show and would like to join our Discord community, consider supporting us on Patreon. We take this time to thank all of our patrons for their support.
This week, we want to send a very special, special and individualized shout out to Ryan C. Ryan, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan. And of course, we cannot do this show without our venture producers, Rusty, Dylan, Nathan, and Brian. Thank you, Avengers.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Chris, let's get into our Marvel Cinematic Universe, Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness review. Well, where to start, Chris? There's a lot of crazy things in this movie, and I think we'll start with the craziest thing right off the top. That's obviously something really good to talk about. And I think one of the highest points of this movie for me personally, and this is a bit of my personal bias, but this movie was directed by Sam Raimi and composed by Danny Elfman. And weirdly, Disney gave them a ton of creative control and sort of freedom, which is kind of unusual in an MCU movie. And we say that they did this with Chloe Zhao for Eternals, and that kind of conflicted with the MCU. But Raimi and then Elfman doing the music in particular, and then, of course, some incredible cinematography by John Matheson, and, of course, some unique editing, make this movie different. And that actually, I think, is a con for some people and a pro for some people.
Well, it's a big pro for me. I'll tell you that.
Inject some excitement into the MCU, right, with some creativity of different filmmaking styles, right?
Right, absolutely. This whole movie feels different from the get-go.
Well, that's true.
The effects feel a little bit different. The camera angles feel a little bit different.
That's Raimi there, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a very Raimi movie, and I kind of love that about it. I think it's a breath of fresh air in the MCU, but, you know, there's no right or wrong opinion on this. It's a subjective art form.
Well, and I think why it's such a good decision to let a director be creative like this is because this is more of a genre film and less of an MCU film. And in them making a genre film that's like a fantasy horror like this, that mainly is fantasy horror over everything else, getting it like an auteur like Raimi, who's like, that's his wheelhouse is horror, but also his wheelhouse was kind of launching the MCU with the original Spider-Man films and sort of their weird quirkiness and camera angles. And
they are weird.
And Danny Elfman doing incredible music for those films. This is a return for them working together. I still think about how good that Doc Ock theme is, where it sounds like you're going all over the piano, like multiple arms, but it being a genre film, and Disney taking this risk, and like you said, Chris, visually also taking some interesting risks and making it open up this sci-fi multiverse element even more as well. I think in them doing it this more creatively kind of opened the doors for the multiverse in different ways too, if you get what I'm saying.
No, it absolutely did. And it also, it did a couple of things in that area, I believe. It gave the MCU audience a true idea of what the multiverse was, a kind of intro course, you know, I especially with some of the cameos in there and how it works. And even through the dialogue, the way they did that, the way they did a lot of it, they represented it visually. But that visual representation is going to do a lot to help us understand the rest of what's going to happen in this phase, because I think it's going to get pretty complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would love to be proven wrong, but I could see this being one of the more creative movies going forward, not in the sense of what the movie does, but in the sense of the way the movie's executed. But I also could see them being like, oh, this made a lot of money. It didn't make as much as like an Avengers movie, but like it made a lot of money. It did well, and it was a risk, and people seemed to like it, and critics seemed to like it as well for the most part. So it's like, I think they could also look at that as like, well, maybe we should give directors more creative control. Not everyone has sort of that initial Favreau style in the Iron Man movies, you know, and like kind of blanket that across the way like they did for a while. And, you know, it's funny, like phase two was kind of like the most locked in of the style. You know, it's kind of like phase one, they were kind of like jumping around a little bit, and phase two, they kind of were like, no, it's got to be, because this is working, you know, it's got to be this formulaic thing. But then every once in a while, they just get directors like a James Gunn to come along and do Guardians and bring a different tone and style to that. You get a Taika Waititi to completely revitalize Thor when Hemsworth is done playing Thor. And now that's not the case at all. He wants to play the character
now. He wants to
for
play
the rest of his life. Yeah,
he wants to retire Thor.
And, you know, the Guardians are still going. And I just love this creative decision to have a genre film directed by a genre director. And it works so well. And we're about to talk about all the reasons why it worked, but why it worked for us in particular. But I think the other side of that coin is, if you don't really love genre films, if you don't like particular sci-fi, fantasy, and horror, which are like kind of the ultimate genre films in a lot of people's minds, this might not be for you, you know? And that's kind of the intention of this, in the sense of it's trying to be more that direction, but then it has a bunch of MCU in it as well. I like those risks, and I think they're worth the payoff, you know? And I think not all of them, not everything in this movie pays off, and everything in this movie is perfect, but like, to me, the creativity was so profound, and the two lead actors were so well executed that it kind of just solidified it in my mind as like one of my favorite MCU movies, in a way where it was just different, you know? And that's what we need when we're 30 films in.
You're not wrong. Hearing that number out loud is kind of just boggling, right? 30 films.
Yeah, we're about 30 in.
And we can probably talk about at least a little bit on every one of them. Like
that's
right
true.
Here, right now, no prep. That's stupid.
That is stupid. And it also means we're mega fans, but it also means the ones we probably can't recall very well. I'm looking at you, like Iron Man 2, Thor 2, stuff like that. Those were more formulaic and those were less memorable. And there's some things going on there. Like, I think there's something with this, you know, because I've even heard people be critical of this movie, but they were like, but I also love this sequence. I also love this sequence. I also love this part. I also love that they did this when I would never thought they'd do this in a Marvel movie. Some of the horror elements, for instance. I think they're onto something good here, and I think all the risks are worth it. So I think we start with that idea because it's cool. But obviously, Chris, we got to talk about like you and I do, before we get into like the film analysis and plot and stuff, we got to talk about the introduction of America Chavez through this film. And I know you're a big America Chavez fan and a Young Avengers fan. I think they mainly executed bringing her into the MCU through this, but obviously it's kind of tough because it's like at its core, this is a strange, at its core, this is Wanda's movie, just straight up. Let's just start there. And also Strange's movie. But without America Chavez, none of these pieces would be in place. And I like how they used that and they introduced her, but it's just, we're kind of right in the action with her because let's talk about the opening scene. The opening scene is Defender Strange protecting her, which is another Strange in another universe.
Look, every epic story starts in the middle of the action.
Love it.
No different here.
That's the George Lucas method right there. That's his favorite method.
That is...
That Flash Gordon, like, just drop you right in.
That is from the Odyssey and the Iliad, sir.
Of course.
That predates old Georgie boy.
Yeah, but that's how we're introduced to her. She's almost killed by this demon, and Defender Strange actually is killed by this demon.
Now, I do want to take a little umbrage here with something you've said already. You said that this is Wanda's movie.
Mainly.
I'd like to push back on that. I think the character growth that you see in America Chavez and Dr. Stephen Strange is 100% illustrated in this opening scene taken with the end of the movie. I think Wanda I think she's great in this movie.
Yeah, she's finally a lead, right?
Yeah. And I'm not trying to take away from her story, but the character growth, I'm just blown away by the character growth seen in this movie and the relationship, the automatic bond formed between Strange and Chavez when it's supposed to be Peter that is
right.
Strange's protege now. I don't know. It's very good. I really, really like it. I think it puts this movie on its back for me.
I agree with you completely about the Strange character development. And I think you're right in the way, and I'll add on to that, where it's like, this is a Strange character development movie built around this Wanda story. You know what I mean? And of course, the Wanda story completely engulfs Strange and America Chavez, and they become full part of this story as well. And why I love the movie so much is, you know, we've gotten so much of Strange in these movies after Doctor Strange, and he was such a hit in all of them, you know, Infinity War, right? Like him fighting Ebony Maw and all this stuff, like, and protecting the Earth, him and Wong protecting the Earth, and all the Sanctum Sanctorum stuff. And of course, we had a fairly large Strange element in Spider-Man No Way Home. So they've been setting all this up. And then, of course, best episode of What If is the Strange episode. But we were just bound to get this Strange-centered movie where it's like, okay, we already had his origin story, which was great, the first one.
One of the better origin story movies.
Probably so.
In the MCU, I think.
Yeah, I've actually been rewatched it a couple times in recent years, and I even liked it more than I did the first time I saw it.
I could see that. It seemed to be one that would hold up, yeah.
You just gotta love that the final climactic scene is just all around Strange using the Orb of Agamotto and talking with Dormammu, you know? And like not actually this sort of MCU spectacle bombastic fight, you know? It's like this just sort of...
All the bombastic was... In the effects, in the backgrounds, and the psychedelic nature of that movie. Yeah, it was very fun.
Yeah. So in this one, we get this cold open we're talking about where we see a different Strange from the start who tries to kill America because he's like, I can't let this demon take your power jump portals. And that's what you're talking about, Chris, which we'll get to later, which is why our 616 Strange is different from all the other Stranges and why we love him so much. And that's something they show in this movie a lot because we see other Stranges. Like in the Illuminati realm.
And we see two other Stranges in this
right.
movie.
And of course, the Mad Strange, the Dark Strange, and they all had good intentions, but they used power to achieve those good intentions. And then the power eventually took over, you know, and something happened because cataclysmic because of that. And I love that they juxtapose that with our Strange, you know, and why he chooses the things he did. And, you know, they set up the film very early on. So after this opening scene where America Chavez gets away, because Strange does save her in the last minute, after he's like, maybe I should kill you. He does save her. She goes through her star portal.
He noticed an opening for the demon to not destroy the multiverse. So he took it.
He's like, cut your tentacles off. America goes through. Now she's in Strange's universe. But the cool part is like we have this character film you're talking about. Like we have Strange at Christine's wedding and we have him Strange talking with his old friends, his old other surgeons, and then being like, yeah, Thanos, so you were the guy that like looked at all possible universes, you know? Was that really the way to go, you know? Which is It's an interesting way to frame it right at the beginning, right?
Well, and it's very realistic too. If something like that, if
you lost happened, your family members like that.
Yeah. Imagine how many people came back to tragic circumstances, you know.
Oh gosh.
That yeah. the 5 years were just 5 years away were just horrible to their family and friends, and they come back to a different world. You know, there's a lot of grief and a lot of ripple effects that came from the blink in this universe. So I think it's very, very astute of the shot callers to introduce that concept early in this movie, that in the whole public knows the story. Everyone knows what happened. Mm-hmm. And Strange is being publicly questioned as to, are you sure that was the only way, this way that yeah. caused so much grief and pain?
Yeah. There's a lot of self-exploration and, like, you know, Strange looking over his own thoughts in this movie, like you talk about, because he's being presented with questions like that. He's at Christine's wedding and she's like, Steven, there's never a universe where we'll work out because, you know, you always want to be the one holding the knife. That's what she says. Leaves him, you know, at where they're talking at the bar at her reception. And then, of course, we have Strange in this moment and we have the demon come after America Chavez, a different demon this time. And we've got a cool MCU battle, but more importantly, we have one of the coolest superhero getting in his costumes thing where Strange drinks his martini, flips over the side balcony, and then the cloak appears, and then he immediately is in his suit from his tuxedo, you know? Just love it. I just love it.
The martini thing was too Bond. It was too much.
That's just a Cumberbatch thing, you know? Is that they're like, do a Cumberbatch thing here. Yeah, him refilling Christine's glass with red wine. That was pretty cool too. But they're just flexing Strange's powers in this, but
he's being selfish. He's searching for happiness. Yeah. He's showing off.
He's feeling very obsolete.
Exactly. That is why he's doing these things. Exactly. You hit the nail on the head there, Jesse.
He was gone. So he lost the title of Sorcerer Supreme to Wong. He came back and kind of didn't do the right thing with Peter Parker. And now he doesn't remember Peter Parker. But things happened, transpired where he had to do stuff. And that didn't quite go right. It's this interesting juxtaposition of how powerful he is mixed with his, you know, his arrogance and his confidence, but also mixed with some of the stuff he's been through that he hasn't really processed yet. Let's be real, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like that juxtaposition of, well, I'm the holder of the Eye of Agamotto. I'm the Sorcerer Supreme, past tense. I'm all these things. So
he still is the Sorcerer Supreme in his head.
Right. So all that's got to, and I understand this because I'm a very like focused person. It's like, he's like, all that has to push down the needs of Stephen Strange, you know, all these titles, all these things, like I got to be defender of the earth.
He sought happiness in titles and responsibility and status.
And skill. Yeah.
Yeah. He absolutely did. He was
the best
of
the best. Yeah.
I think you said something really good in there. It's not only that he never did process, he never even let himself process things.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
It's kind of that trap that so many folks fall into of, it's not seeing communication vulnerability as weakness. And that's how I kind of interpreted what was going on with Strange in the beginning of this movie. And there's something I'm excited to point out later whenever we get to the scene.
Yeah.
We'll get there and I'll tie it back into where we're at here, but we should move. Yeah. And get there.
Yeah. And spoilers abound. I mean, we've already been in spoilers, but it's like, there's a lot of connections that Raimi and the script writers use that I think are very powerful. Where it's like Christine in this universe versus Christine, we're going to get later on. And it's like the things he's done, you know, that she was the love of his life, but like why it didn't work, you know, these sort of things. So moving on, we have Strange and Wong fight a Shumagorath looking demon, but it's not actually Shumagorath. So I got excited when I first saw the trailers. I was thinking it was him, but no, it's just a demon. And they save America Chavez in a very, you know, Strange defeats the demon at the very end with a very Raimi way. He conjures some giant demon hands and picks up a giant stoplight and stabs it right in the demon's eye. And then it pulls it right out.
Oh,
plops out. And you're like, so okay, good. We're full genre film now. They're just going for it. And he does a little screech and scream. And
mm-hmm. That's very fun.
But then they have their meeting with America Chavez and it's quippy. It's MCU. But more importantly, it's them learning that the multiverse is real. She can jump through the multiverse and she has no other versions of herself. So she's one of the most unique individuals in world, galaxy. You know what I mean? List goes on.
Multiversal existence.
Exactly. And because she doesn't dream and she doesn't have any other versions of herself. And, you know, they also learned that dreaming is you seeing through the eyes of your other selves and other universes. And it's a cool thing to set up in the MCU, something that's from the comics and things like that. But now they're actually fully embracing it, you know? And Wong talks about, so that means all those nightmares I have of being chased by a clown, you know? It's like, well, some universe, Wong, that's happening. This is a pretty cool introduction with America Chavez and Nut. And this is also where we find Defender Strange's body, because he got sucked through America Chavez's portal as well. And Strange buries him on a roof of a building.
You pretty much summed it up. These are scenes to move things along. Tie up some loose ends, set up some things for later, and some good character building and things like that, you know.
I love the Strange and Wong relationship here too. We're getting more of it, you know. They've always had it.
It's really developed, and you can tell that they're that kind of in some kind of frenemy stage here.
Absolutely. I think Strange is still not over, of course, Wong being the Sorcerer Supreme.
And don't discount Wong, you know.
Right.
He's got to feel a little insecure being next to the more talented former Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah. Who is directly chosen by the Ancient One and holder of the Aia Gogmode, all these things. Yeah, it's tales old as time, you know, these sort of frenemy buddies. I also love the comedy of, you know, our Strange, where he's like, there is a universe where I have a ponytail. Because, you know, the Defender Strange, he has a long top knot ponytail. So this is when all the action really happens, because Strange immediately goes to Wanda because he finds runes on the demons. And he's like, well, there's a demons with inscripted runes on it chasing America Chavez. I got to find Wanda. And Wanda's like, oh, you're here about Westview. And he's like, actually, no, I'm not here about Westview, but I would like you to come back. The Avengers would love to have you back. And this is when Wanda plays coy for a while. And she's like, you know, I can't lie anymore. She's like, the lying's the hard part here. And then, you know, everything is revealed that her actual farm that she retreated to has completely been taken over by Chaos Magic and the Darkhold, because since WandaVision, Chris, she has been reading that Darkhold and hearing the voices of her boys in her ears. And this is a good time to talk about the WandaVision strength and issue with this movie, right?
Sure.
What are your thoughts when I say that initially?
Well, obviously, the strengths are that we have been rewarded with all this character development and right. side stories, and in comic terms, this limited mini series leading into the big event.
Okay. Yeah.
We absolutely were rewarded for putting that time in, knowing that backstory. On the other hand, I could see this whole thing being a little confusing for those folks that did not, or maybe they just didn't like WandaVision for whatever reason. Or didn't have time, didn't have interest, whatever it was. Didn't get past
those first two episodes, maybe?
Sure. I'm sure there's a whole swath of people that did not get past those first two episodes.
There's already things I've been thinking about where it's like, my dad loved Doctor Strange 1, for instance. He has not seen WandaVision. How do I go about, you know, giving him the backstory for the show if he's not actually going to watch WandaVision? I don't know, you know, because it is very crucial to Wanda's arc here, because she's been through a lot of stuff before this, but without WandaVision, you don't have that context, I think.
I think the easiest way to frame it for someone is that Wanda as a character right now is a character driven by grief and loss.
Absolutely.
She's lost her brother. She's lost her love. And, you know, in her psychotic break and her unlimited power in bringing him back, she created more things to lose, and she did. And so,
yeah, and that's her drive.
I think that is her drive, there is no logic anymore. She is driven by grief and all of these decisions. I would almost see the Darkholm as a representation of grief in this movie, in a way.
Yeah. It's a vestige to give you false hope. You know, it's that absolutely. Sort of when mankind is gripped by fear, like the things you'll do to circumvent that fear sometimes is just more horrible things, you know, that maybe started the fear in the first place. But I find her story so interesting in this, because they have been setting this up for so long. Like you said, I mean, she's lost so much and she's grown so much in her power, and they've kind of done a really good job in the MCU showing how powerful she truly is, what it means to be a reality contortionist. What that actually means in the terms of the MCU. I mean, and they've shown that was Strange, but hers is a whole nother level, you know?
During my more recent watch through, I was wondering about that, how much of the current reality she has shaped, period, you know?
Yeah.
But they might not do anything with that, but it was something I kind of thought.
Well, Strange gives her an ultimatum. That's where we're at, you know, and doesn't go so well. She ends up attacking Carmitaj, and all the sorcerers can't hold her back despite their best efforts to be defensive and keep you know, Carmitage, the defensive place it is, you know, one of the most defensive places in the entire Earth, you know, but she does break through a lot of this sort of manipulation of other magic and reality. And of course, you know, she starts breaking the ranks of sorcerers, you know, by whispering in their ears,
getting in their heads.
That's good stuff.
A lot of cool stuff.
But she does kill all the sorcerers and eventually gets down to Strange, Wong, and Chavez. And this is when we see Chavez's power kick in again, you know, through her fear. This is when her multiversal jumping happens and Wong gets left behind, but Strange and Chavez get away. And Wanda captures Wong, starts torturing him, and starts using the Darkhold more to dreamwalk and follow them through the multiverse. And we're introduced to dreamwalking through the words of Baron Mordo as he's kind of narrating, which is cool, but also the excellent, excellent visual style of Sam Raimi and his editing team, where it's like we've got the shots fading in on top of each other. We got Wanda levitating, doing all the dark magic. And then we see pictures of the Darkhold, very similar to the Necronomicon of the Evil Dead trilogy. And we see, of course, you know, what this means to dreamwalk, which is this is going to be a big part of this movie, you know, the dreamwalking thing. But hey, we got Strange in America in a different universe. And this is where I think, Chris, some of the stuff you're talking about. We got a different version of New York. It's very pretty. We got plant life everywhere. We got no trash. We got people dressed pretty nice. And then we got like all sorts of tech where we got the memory lane. You see some Strange and Christine memories where she gave him the watch, you know, where sure. They were pre-engaged.
This is also where we learn America Chavez's kind of origin. And I think this is an area where you really see Strange soften towards her once he sees what she's been through. We see her origin story, of course, of her powers first manifesting and dragging her parents away to an unknown dimension, and then her just kind of having to jump dimensions for the rest of her life to this point.
And she assumes that she, in fact, killed her parents. Like, that's right. The fact that she has built her life around, you know? Right.
So she's scared of her powers. Absolutely.
Yeah, and she's truly not only an orphan, as in being parentless in the traditional sense, but she's also an orphan in the fact that we've learned that her greatest strength is her uniqueness, not having anyone else in the universe like her, even in other dimensions. But she's made it a fearful thing, you know, but it's actually one of her biggest strengths, right? Is that no one's like her. But in fact, she is like, it's terror to her because she's lost. And like you said, she tells Strange that she's jumped in over 70 dimensions, which is just a crazy thing.
The funny part about this scene for me is when America asks Strange if he has experience with the multiverse, and
right,
oh yes, of course, very assured, very, very confident.
Some incidents with Spider-Man we dealt with. Yeah.
And lo and behold, he knows next to nothing. And this
he's
kid,
learning from her. Yeah.
Yes. It's not, she's been the key to this whole thing. We'll get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And this sets up we have some more standard MCU scenes. I mean, we do have a great scene with the pizza papa, Bruce Campbell.
Absolutely. Pizza papa gets paid, man.
He always gets paid. America Chavez is like, food's free, right? And he's like, not in this universe. You know, she's like, oh, it's weird. It's free in most universes I've been to. And she steals the pizza balls, and pizza papa basically is giving us plot story where he's like, did you steal this from the Strange Museum guy? Right. You know, and he tries to squirt the mustard at Strange, and Strange, of course, puts his own self-inflicting spell on him and tells America Chavez, don't worry, as he's punching himself, the pizza papa, that it'll wear off in a couple weeks. And they immediately are like, we should go to the Strange Museum, obviously. And apparently they find out Strange is gone in this universe, and there's a memorial to him.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then we see Mordo.
Yeah. And who are they greeted by? But Baron Mordo, the sorcerer supreme of this universe, apparently a member of the Illuminati. Excellent.
He drugs them.
He drugs Strange in America, and they wake up captured. Mm-hmm. And this is where it gets very, very interesting. We are introduced by Mordo, who is as the Sorcerer Supreme sits on this council. We are introduced to the Illuminati, the most powerful or smartest or most trusted superheroes of this universe. And of course,
right,
Mordo being one. We have Captain Carter, who is Peggy Carter, is with the super soldier serum.
Yep,
super soldier serum. We, of course, have Black Bolt. Very, very cool. Costume looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Maria Photon Rambeau.
Different Captain Marvel in this universe, because Mordo does refer to her as Captain Marvel.
Yes, Photon and Captain Marvel. It's we went over all that in our Captain Marvel episode.
Very complex.
It is extremely
history
complex.
On that character.
And then the big reveal.
Well, two of them, but yeah.
The bigger one for me, the other one was welcome and fun, but
par for the course.
Of course, was Mr. Fantastic himself, played by John Krasinski there, and great take on the character, good introduction. Yep.
That's some fan casting right there.
It was.
That's Ahsoka all over again.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that he will play that character in the future, because this was a different universe. You could cast anybody in our in the 616 universe if you wanted to bring the Fantastic Four in. But I thought the portrayal was pretty good. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And you have the Illuminati revealing the truth.
And they say it's time to bring in our final member.
Yes.
And we should tell him the truth. And that's the line uttered by Mr. Charles Xavier as he comes out in his, of course, yellow chair. We're going full 90s X-Men here.
Yeah.
And yeah, the truth you're talking about, Chris, is that we have another Strange, the one with the monuments too. And he was the founder of the Illuminati in this universe. When Thanos came to their universe, Strange was determined to beat Thanos. So he turned to the Darkhold. And he started dreamwalking. So once again, we're seeing that dreamwalking come up that Wanda's doing as she traces them. And in Strange's words, the Illuminati, things just got out of hand and he went too far. And so in this universe, they did beat Thanos, but they had to do the unthinkable. And in Strange's life, even, you know, he was completely in agreement with this, you know, because he had created an incursion through using the Darkhold. He had created an incursion and he had destroyed an entire another universe, and all life in that universe was destroyed.
Very tough.
Ooh.
Probably the right call there, but the way he went out, I just absolutely loved the portrayal of Black Bolt's power here. I thought visually it was perfect. He simply whispers, "I'm sorry." Ugh. And Strange disintegrates. And notably, that's the second version of Strange. Well, third, including the 616 version of Strange that will have been portrayed by Cumberbatch in this movie to this point.
Right. And a fun fact of the scene that really struck a chord with me the second time I saw it, Chris, is, you know, everyone's looking really somber in that scene because, of course, they all have to watch Strange die in front of them. But the craziest little side fact is in this universe, Strange had a fully blue tunic and a fully blue cloak of levitation.
Yep.
And Reed Richards is in the background holding the cloak of levitation because, of course, the cloak of levitation is sentient and like he was not guilty of Strange's crimes of using the Darkhold, you know. So they, of course, let the sentient being live. It's just sad. It makes it sadder to me. like he's holding the cloak looking somber and the cloak's, of course, watching this as well. So, of course, this is a big moment, Chris, because, we got given the Illuminati, but the actual point of this moment is that we get Wanda dreamwalking to this universe into the body of a Wanda Maximoff who has her boys, who's his mom, and she takes over her body. You know, we have some cool horror moments here.
That's a terrifying thought too, but.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Not only that, but I think it's important to point out here that it is the Scarlet Witch doing this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
She is in the Temple of the Darkholm. Right.
Because at this point she's
gone there fully, with Wong. Fully powered, because the Illuminati in this universe that we find ourselves in, they're not scared of the Scarlet Witch at all.
In their
universe, they're not scared of Wanda, but I don't know that they have dealt with the Scarlet Witch. And it's clear that they haven't, because it doesn't take long for 616 Scarlet Witch to find her way to the Illuminati and just absolutely shred through the Ultron unit guards.
Oh, yeah.
She makes absolute quick work of the actual Illuminati. There is the fun moment between Krasinski as Reed Richards here.
Yeah, and, do you have kids?
And Wanda. And
is their mother still alive? Yes, good. She still is. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
It's a good scene, but the way they illustrate the Scarlet Witch's power here is just insane. It's awesome. She just shreds
what these mouth powerful does Black Bolt have. That's just never did I think we would get something like that in the MCU. I'm gonna be honest.
Well, I'll tell
Black
you
Bolt exploding his own head.
Black Bolt exploding his head was something straight out of The Boys.
Mm-hmm.
That absolutely. The effects used, the way they depicted it, it was straight out of The Boys.
And then, of course, she makes short work of Reed. He gets shredded up, and then it's
literally turned into ribbons.
It's literally just Rambo and Captain Carter at that moment. And Captain Carter gets severed in half, and she falls off from her body from the vibranium shield that Wanda controlled, you know, with her powers. And
gave her the old fastball.
Yeah, we have a good fight between Captain Marvel and her. And, you know, Captain Marvel in binary forms even actually putting a lot of heat on Wanda, but Wanda ends up overpowering her. We have a very Dragon Ball Z sort of moment. And then, yeah, of course, collapsing the Illuminati statues on her body and just crushing her. And yeah, then she's right there chasing Strange. And we haven't mentioned it yet. And of course, we got to mention that this character exists, but we get introduced to this universe first through this universe, which we are told is 838, Christine Palmer, who is the lead researcher of the Multiversal Research Facility at the Baxter Building. And she has done all this research about these other universes and becomes a main character in this plot, this different version of Christine, you know, entirely. And I found that very interesting because, like you said, a lot of this movie is just about character development for Stephen Strange. And he asks her, what was I to you in this universe? And she said, we never quite figured that out. And so he's getting the same story again, you know?
Well, I think there's a lot here with the 838 Christine Palmer. She's projecting her Stephen Strange onto him, and he is projecting hers onto her.
And we know how the Strange ended and what happened with him. Keep that in mind, right? Setting our Strange apart from the rest, which we're, like you said, we're going to talk more about at the end, but
we'll get there. I don't think our Strange is that different from the rest.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. They hint at some of that. So we have a great chase sequence with Wanda. She's shoeless, you know, and mom clothes, just crushing through glass and bleeding everywhere. And just, she would stop at nothing to get America Chavez. And, you know, and I think some of the things you mentioned earlier, Chris, something that immediately struck me in my second viewing with this being a parent, I was like, she just took over that woman's body and left the boys at home by themselves.
100%.
Like she's trying to, her drive is this motherhood and being a mother and her drive for her husband and her boys, like her family unit again. But she, in fact, is, you know, doing the opposite. You know, this is a tale as old as time. We've seen this a lot. This is the Anakin Skywalker story all over again. You know, it's like
this actually 100% is a very condensed Anakin Skywalker story.
Get all this power.
Absolutely. For sure.
It'll save your family. But in getting the power, you just completely neglect them, hurt them.
And getting the power to save them, you are their destruction.
Oh.
And the thing you sought to protect them from.
It's rough, man. It's freaking rough.
It is rough. It is rough. But to me, we're about to hit the home stretch of the movie here. And this is just, this movie just really, really sets itself apart from the rest, starting here. There is a confrontation that I found very, very interesting. The confrontation between Professor X and Wanda that happened inside 838 version of Wanda. This confrontation happens inside her mind. And the way they chose to execute this scene, it is beautiful. This beautiful stark white background and a little bit of rubble. The rubble looks straight out of Sokovia from Avengers 2. And 838 Wanda is hiding in this rubble.
Yep.
Professor X, not in his wheelchair or his magic floaty yellow thing, because he is a mental projection right here. So he is, Patrick Stewart is walking, dressed very smartly, by the way.
Yes, of course. That black turtleneck and the slacks. Yeah.
Incredible. But he tries to coax Wanda out of this rubble. And then the Scarlet Witch arrives. And the depiction of the Scarlet Witch arriving, I found to be both beautiful and haunting in its depiction, as this red smoke just billowing in on this this stark white background with only one thing to focus on, and that's this rubble and Patrick Stewart standing in the middle of it. It is just absolutely a breathtaking scene. Excellently, excellently executed. I can't say enough about it. And then, I mean, when Wanda visualizes out of the fog, it is, once again, you are reminded that we are in an actual horror movie. This is not a psychological thriller, even though it pretended to be for one scene.
Yeah. And she pops out and either severs his jaw or his neck or both, which I
think she snaps his neck. Yeah.
Which is a crazy thing. But also, we didn't mention earlier in the movie, they pull no punches when we got these crazy Rammy horror shots of doors shutting and cameras flipping over. And, you know, Strange does put her in the mirror dimension to try to slow her down at Carmitage.
Ugh.
And she contorts reality and climbs through the mirror dimension through reflections and actually cuts her body up a lot through the mirror dimension. That's a nice little touch.
And absolutely.
She kind of healing factors her body back through reality and contorts like the Grudge or Ringu.
I was going to say, it's kind of a callback to the Ring and Ringu and the Grudge. Yeah.
It's not healing factor. It's reality contortion, right, Chris?
Right. Like she's literally snapping herself back together.
It's so good. Yeah. And her popping out of that mist. And we haven't talked about her costume in this, her makeup, but all incredible, all different in this from any other iteration of her. But most notably is the crown and, of course, her fingers, which are, you know, corrupted by the Darkhold, which you actually see if you watch again.
Yes.
The Strange in the 838 universe, he has his shaking hands like Strange always does, but he has the corrupted fingers from the Darkhold. You know, of course, goatee-less, beardless Strange too. Nice touch there. Different thing.
Every independent Strange not only had different facial hair, but also different color magic.
Oh, gosh. I know. That Defender Strange with his ice magic and his full beard with the ponytail. And then, of course, we had just kind of a clean-shaven 838 Strange.
We didn't get to see the color of 838's magic, though, unfortunately.
But presumably, he was using chaos magic, you know, with the red.
Maybe.
If he was using the Darkhold. But I like that makeup detail, because you know that was something that probably Lizzie Olsen had to be in the chair a long time every day to get her, not only her makeup, but her, of course, her hand makeup every day. And, you know, she starts developing claws and stuff in this too, during these horror bits, which is a crazy, crazy thing. So Xavier tries, he really does. But, you know, he literally, as you said, Chris, is trying to save this universe's Wanda from the Scarlet Witch. Because once again, we're not Wanda on Wanda here. This is the essence of the Scarlet Witch, like you said. Wanda is lost.
Yeah, this is Vader. I mean,
yeah,
Anakin's dead.
Oh, gosh.
I'd like to push back a little bit. I kind of think that was kind of a Hail Mary play there by Professor X, obviously, but
yeah, obviously.
Not push back, but I really think he knew that he did not have a good chance of prevailing here with the way she just tore through the others so easily. Okay. I think he was 100% just trying to buy Strange time.
Good point, because he does tell Strange where the Vishanti, Book of Vishanti
is. Well, he even has a confrontation with Mordo about how Professor X believes in this Strange. And I think that this kernel of belief is what sets our Strange apart, because Professor X is not the first one to do it.
That's true.
America goes to bat for him a little bit earlier in the movie.
And then shortly after this.
Yeah, shortly after
Christine,
this scene. And it's these two instances of these two characters believing in Stephen Strange that lets him start believing in himself again.
I love it.
The thing that sets our Stephen apart, the 616 Stephen apart, is the fact that America even happened, because in this next scene that we're going to get, we see the illustration of the Stephen Strange that does not get interrupted by America Chavez at that wedding.
Yeah. Do you just want to jump into that scene? Because we talked about the chase. We talked about how Christine is starting to come around on to Strange. Like, she's understanding that he actually might be different. A couple fun things here. We have some great Rammy comedy moments where we have the intense horror suspense building up, and then it's a creature running down the hallway and the music's building up, and then it's just Strange, you know, coming around the corner. That's classic Rammy stuff.
That was good.
It's that camp meets the actual intense horror.
And subverting expectations as well.
Absolutely. Very good. And they do that several times in this movie. I mean, it's like the scene where he sees Mordo and they have these close eye shots and they're about to fight, and then they give each other a hug, you know. And Strange is like, this is a go on red universe. You're right. You know, this is a different thing. So yeah, let's talk about that next scene, Chris, because they do get chased by Scarlet Witch, I talked about, and her mom, Jeans. I love it. And Christine does tell Steven that, like, the code to break the rune, to open the final door, to actually escape to the Book of the Vishanti is his watch. You know, it's this connective tissue, right?
Well, not only is it his watch, but she's wearing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty wild thing, right?
The most important possession Stephen Strange has in almost every universe is that watch. And in the 838, where Stephen is dead, she is wearing that watch.
It's a big deal.
It just goes to show that she's the Christine that 616 wants.
Oh, man. Oh, it hurts.
It hurts. Yeah. It does hurt.
It does hurt, but this is maybe why he's so different, you know, in some of the ways. But
I think he's become different through this journey now.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, they allude to a lot of this in Doctor Strange 1. It's fun to see these seeds pay off, where it's like the realization in Doctor Strange 1 that Strange and Mordo both have simultaneously about the Ancient One, that she's actually been fighting the good fight for so many centuries because she's been pulling from the dark dimension, dark power to keep herself alive. The means that she went to get her ends, you know, and Mordo is so didactic. He's so like lawful, you know, he's like, right, there's only one way and you broke mess with reality.
He's very letter of the law about it.
And so that Mordo in the 616 universe ends up going dark side because,
right,
his whole worldview has been shattered because his mentor, who's this essence of good, the Sorcerer Supreme, in fact, was pulling on dark magic all these years to do things. And Strange takes us to the next level with the Eye of Agamotto. We know this. And it further distances from Mordo, but Ancient One sees something in him that she says, you're different. Like, you will be the best Sorcerer Supreme because you can see the means to an end, but you actually can fight the evils. So she says something like that. She's like, better than I did. And she actually admits to some of the evils she's succumbed to over the years, but warns him of the dangers, warns him.
And I do believe Professor X sees that same thing in him. I do believe that America Chavez sees that same thing in him.
And that leads to this next scene that you want to talk about, I'm sure.
I do. Right? I do want to talk about this scene.
So fill us in here, Chris, on this.
Well, naturally, Scarlet Witch is going to get away with America Chavez, and she's going to pull the strings of America's mind to use America's body to open up a portal to somewhere. And in this somewhere, it is actually, in fact, the realms that converged from the Stephen Strange in the 838. This is what he was punished for. Scarlet Witch has teleported them there. And they eventually make their way to some sort of sanctum, sanctorum, to find the last version of Doctor Strange that we will meet. And as the Stranges talk, he says something very interesting. The newest Strange, the Convergence Strange,
mm-hmm,
he says something about how he was at the very same wedding that we found 616 Stephen Strange attending. And instead of that wedding being interrupted by America Chavez, this version of Stephen Strange went home and brooded on loneliness and loss and grief. And he too did some terrible things. And then you start to notice the blackened fingers.
Darkhold.
Yes. And he is the holder of the Darkhold here in this realm. And I found that very interesting that he said that, because it seems that our Stephen Strange was on the very same path until America stumbles into his life, which brings him into contact with this Professor X, who sees this in her. America sees this in him, and it is the belief in him that when he's faced with these same choices, he's going to be faced with the choice here very shortly, that he makes the choice every other Stephen Strange could not.
Love it. Yeah. And we get this confrontation, but also this sort of meeting of the minds and recognition of each other's flaws and wants between these two Stranges. Yes, one is definitely a dark side Strange that went down this different path that's very obvious with the you know, dark makeup, dark hair, the long goatee. Things just got out of hand is what he says. And of course, this universe is shattered. Things are off in this universe. I mean, the Sanctum Sanctorum is there's a bridge that leads to a floating multiversal nothingness, you know, sort of thing. But I like the similarities and the differences between them. And something that really stuck with me in this scene is the discussion of, he's like, how can I trust you're actually me and not some manifestation, is what the Dark Side Strange says. And Strange is like, well, we had a young sister that no one knows about, you know, that passed away very young. And, you know, her name was Donna. And the Strange is like, okay, yeah, we did. And that's a shared trauma they have, you know, but it's this sort of thing. We get all these nuances of Strange in this movie through his other versions, like you're talking about, Chris. We're learning more about our character through these different versions of him that made right or wrong decisions, different power sets, absolutely, but the same Stranges. And that's my favorite part about this movie is that, you know, at its core, the plot, it's a Wanda movie, like I said, but I mean, really it's an exploration of Strange's character and an introduction to America Chavez. And this fight between these two Stranges, because it eventually happens, because Strange rejects the Darkhold in this scene, sort of. He rejects this Strange's take on what needs to be done for the universe. And they fight, and Strange doesn't want to fight him, but they end up fighting. And we have a meeting of the minds of Danny Elfman and, you know, Rami, like I talked about earlier, where we have...
Very awesome scene. Very awesome fight.
Yeah, a musical spell battle. I mean, something that, you know, puts Harry Potter to shame in a lot of ways, but it's that sort of style where it's like they are manifesting spells. They are using objects in the room and adding spells to these objects and manifesting power out of those, you know, in different ways. And of course, in this room, it's a big music room with a harp and piano and all these things and lots of sheet music that becomes stuff that has been imbued with the power. And they have sort of a rock band-esque fight, which is awesome, where Danny Elfman was having time of his life recreating some of Beethoven's Fifth, some of Wagner, and some original pieces of just crazy dissonant stuff colliding, you know, musical notes colliding. And it's cool because it's like, it's a fun thing to watch where it's like only Doctor Strange can give us this sort of MCU fight, you know, where it's not so much a big bombastic fight. It's this sort of like two wizards, you know, trying to outthink each other. And it's very visually and musically stunning. And it was cool to have a musically stunning scene in the MCU because that's not normal. Like the music was the centerpiece.
I thought the music was the most boring part.
Well, the visuals are insane, but I mean, obviously the idea of like...
The idea of the music is so cool, but the fact that they just used some kind of obvious choices for the music was, I thought...
Stuff straight off the street music pages.
It wasn't very... I get why they did it. I understand the in-universe logic.
Right.
And it's still a little bit too safe, a little bit too boring for me, but... Yeah, everything else
musical
about,
notes being
no,
spells.
No, yeah, that had nothing to do with the music playing in the background.
Yeah,
the visuals and the acting, everything else about this is absolutely insane. It's awesome. It's one of my favorite fight scenes in the MCU, bar none. It's right up there. It's top three, I think.
And yeah, Strange gets one note out of that harp and hits, you know, hits the Dark Strange's magic and explodes it on himself.
Isn't that the coolest part about how all it took was that one little unseen note to bring about all that chaos? Very cool.
Yeah, and he flies out the window and is impaled on spikes outside of his gothic version of Sanctum Sanctorum.
And they show it, man, and that's cool. They show all of it in this movie. It's very great. It's great.
Yeah, we didn't mention earlier, but, you know, Defender Strange obviously dies by the demon's tentacle, and it just sears a hole right through his chest, you know, and his leg, you know, we see it. But, you know, Christine is still working with Strange here, and this is where it gets real crazy when you're talking about Strange. What you're talking about, Chris, where Strange has an idea to get back to America Chavez because now, as you mentioned, Scarlet Witch is just fully going after America, taking her power out of her. She's starting the ritual. Also, Wong has been knocked off the cliff by Wanda and her demons. We don't know if he's returning at this point.
We've hit the end game.
We're coming to that climax of the story. And what a climax this is, Chris. This is my new favorite moment in the MCU.
Oh, really?
I think so. Yeah. But I think this is my sort of love of genre films, horror and fantasy in particular, and especially this sort of Rami gothic style. used in a cool way in the MCU, you know, with the budgets they have and the tech they have, you know, it's unbelievable.
It looks amazing.
But there's actually sequences that lead even up to what I'm talking about. But we have Strange say, if I could dream walk to that universe, I could save America, you know, to Christine. And they have a couple discussions about the dangers of that. Isn't that what led this Strange or Wanda or all these things certain way? Those are spoken about, right? Between him and Christine. But I love the practical effects in these scenes where it's like Strange pulls all the candles in his house to the room. You know, they all get sucked in. This is a Raimi effect.
They all light at once. Yeah.
Yeah. Practical stuff. He starts using the Darkhold to reach out in that universe. And this is where it gets crazy.
This is the illustration of how our Strange, the 616 Strange, is different.
Mm.
Given the choice of using the Darkhold, or initially he rejects it. And once he comes to the realization, much like the path taken with Thanos, that this is the only possible way I can have any effect on the outcome of how this all plays out, is to use the Darkhold and dreamwalk. And that is exactly what he does. But how, you say? Well, the dead Strange, dead Defenders Strange, that is buried on some roof in New York City.
He's like, they didn't say the body had to be alive. You know, you can dreamwalk into a body of and your it's, other
it's
self.
Important, I think it's not important to note. I think it's interesting to note here that before he does it in the discussions, he knows that this is against the laws of magic. And this is just a little good world building snippet. We're not told the laws of magic. It's just told to you that this is one of them. And this, what he's about to do, you know, dreamwalking in a dead body is against those laws. So he knows that these evil spirits are going to come. Right.
This is the second movie where he's broken the laws of magic to defeat a greater.
That is a Stephen Strange special right there.
It's thinking outside the box. Yeah.
That's what he does.
But he also warns this Christine that in doing this, he might break some laws and things might happen. You know, he might die and he's okay with that to save America. And also crazy dark magic things might happen. And that's what happens. So we actually have some pretty fun classic Raimi scenes where we have, you know, the spirits of the damned actually come out of Strange's body and infect her universe, you know, because they have an open pathway, right? Essentially, because he's kind of traveling through limbo in a sense to this. And she defeats some of them with the magical artifacts in her place, which is cool. Strange is at this point not making it. She says he's burning up, he's dying, and but she gives him a little words of encouragement saying, like, because we actually see him go into the body, but his body, his actual body in real life, is dying, you know, as he's doing this. It's not hanging on because the spirits are taking over. This Christine, maybe like you were talking about, Chris, her being different and her actually having more faith in Strange than she even let on at first, I think, the Strange in her universe. But she's like, they have no power of you. You are the Sorcerer Supreme, you know?
Well, that's right. And that's a very kind of magical thinking principle to do in the first place, is twist something that came at you with bad intention or whatever and use that power yourself. And that is exactly what Strange does. He bends these spirits of the damned to his will and takes their power for his own. They kind of become his zombie spirits of damned cloak. The cloak of the damned, if you will. You know, he uses it to fly up to the temple of the Darkholm, and we find ourselves ready for the final confrontation.
And obviously just absolutely visually stunning, because we have Benedict Cumberbatch in full prosthetics being zombie Strange with the ponytail and then missing half of his jaw, and he's got the hole in his chest.
And a light stage of decomposition as well.
Decomposition. And my favorite part, Chris, and I think this is why it's my new favorite MCU moment, where it's like he wrests control of the spirits. Like you said, he makes a bat-like cloak. But even before that, he goes, you know, full power of the Vishanti. He's got the multi-arm, and he's got multi-arms from the spirits.
It's so cool. Well, it's the same picture when he harnesses everything in Strange One,
right?
In the dark universe. You know, it's the same.
In the dark dimension.
In the dark dimension. It's that same pose. Yeah.
And if anywhere,
it's that same pose, but it's using the spirits of the damned to make the pose, and it's
Full zen. Yeah.
So cool.
So he flies up to Wanda, and at this point, we actually see that Wong survived, and Wong actually ends up killing one of the behemoth demons, which is awesome, with his magical weapon that, of course, can manifest in different ways. He's using it as sort of a hook, you know, weapon to get back up on the roof. And Wong is so happy to see Strange. It's actually a cool moment because, like you said, we've had this sort of frenemy thing going on off and on the last two movies, that being Spider-Man in this movie. And, you know, he's so happy to see Strange using powers in the ways that Wong doesn't like. But trying to come save the day.
And I think Wong understands that there was likely no other choice. I think he knows Strange enough to this point because he even says, I don't care. I don't even want to know. Let's just handle business.
Yeah. And then we have a Strange Wanda fight, you know, and it doesn't last that long because really the point of this fight is Strange is using he's not using a fully functional body. He's using a way to get to America Chavez and try to buy some time, either save her, but what it ends up being is actually unlocking her power, you know, which is a big deal here.
His belief in her.
Absolutely.
She, bringing it full circle. He's the first one to really believe in her.
Well, and also tell her powers are not a curse, like her orphanage and her powers. Right.
Very Professor X of him in a way, really. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. She inspired him. He now inspires her, and America Chavez takes control of her powers. She doesn't beat the Scarlet Witch, though.
No, she kind of knocks Scarlet Witch out of Wanda in a little bit.
She twists it. She gives Scarlet Witch exactly what it is she wants, and that's access to the dimension that has the 838 dimension that has her boys. This portal, this star-shaped portal, is open right in the living room.
Talk about some Elizabeth Olsen acting here.
Right. It's insane.
We got anger going to like the psychotic anger going to like sadness, going to joy, going back to sadness. You know, there's a lot going on.
Right.
Here.
And these very boys that Wanda wants to take and raise and protect from harm,
mm-hmm.
see her as she is. They see the Scarlet Witch in her full power.
Yep.
And she is a monster, and they freak out and they summon, you know, the 838. Wanda, who's not the Scarlet Witch.
We just talked about the power of using like the same actor playing two characters, you know, in a fight scene per se, you know, but also in a great verbal confrontation before that. Not very many words are spoken in the scene, but Lizzie Olsen in both these scenes, both these characters, just delivers the two of them, you know, the realization between the two of them, what I could become, what I have become, right? Those actually aren't my boys. Then they will never be my boys because of they're her boys. And also I've gone to these ends is crazy, you know? Yeah. So this actually leads the Scarlet Witch to snap out of it a little bit and become Wanda again and actually destroy the Darkhold. And she uses her powers to do it because she actually only has the power to do it because no one else has the power to destroy Mount Wandagore. And she destroys all copies of the Darkhold throughout the multiverse, which apparently sacrifices herself in the process.
Well, maybe. There is that little flash of red light in there that could have signified her passing, or it could have been debris bouncing off of a magical force field or something. But
yeah,
tied that ending up really nice and neat, though, didn't they?
For now. Of course, the film ends with us showing Carmitage being rebuilt, repaired with the surviving sorcerers, and we see America Chavez learning to use the Sling Ring and becoming a sorcerer herself, you know? And it's pretty cool. Like it's like you talked about Strange and America believing each other and the kind of that nice little ending moment before we actually get the credits scene, the first credit scene, you know, which MCU always getting weird with that stuff. But first credit scene, we see Strange walking and he drops in pain. And then we see the third eye that was on the dark hold Strange form on his head and open up for the first time. Crazy. And it's a crazy screaming Raimi ending. You know, you end with like Bruce Campbell screaming at the camera and the camera zooms in real fast in his mouth. Like the Darkhold still survived through Strange, which is crazy because it's been destroyed everywhere.
Using the Darkhold takes a toll on its user that is established. And it wasn't just a figurative, you might do some bad things or...
Right.
You know, have to inhabit a dead body for a little while. It it literally changes you. And this is the manifestation of that. And also the effect on this, the third eye effect they use, is just so, it's so good. It looks great.
It does look good. It's really cool. But of course, we get our first mid-credit scene, which is Strange approached by the sorceress Clea. And she's like, we got to go to the dark dimension. And that's just classic MCU thing.
He caused a convergence. Unlike the other Stranges, he is ready to get in there and fix it.
Deal with it. Yeah. And then, of course, the guy I mentioned, the Pizza Papa post-credit scene, he's relieved of his spell. Finally, he punches himself several times. He's covered in bruises and black eyes. And then his hand finally stops. Of course, a reference to Bruce Campbell in the Evil Dead trilogy, where he beat up himself several times with his own hand before he cut it off for the chainsaw arm. And he says it's over, you know, which is it's funny for the character because the spell's over, but he's also telling you the movie's over and we'll have fun again another time. But it's just a fun little Easter egg. So excellent, excellent experience, this movie, the balance of the camp, the comedy, the horror, the suspense, the violence, and the character building. You know, there's a lot going on here. Honestly, maybe too much to catch the first time. You know, there's sure. So much. I think this film begs to be rewatched for the visual and musical prowess of the film. But also, as you were saying, Chris, there's so many layers to characters and their stories in this. This just past Strange and Wanda. I mean, all the side characters have little mini arcs as well. And of course, America, being a lead character as well, has a big primary arc where she's kind of an origin story for us.
Oh, in the MCU. It's absolutely an origin story, but I think it's kind of hinted here that she's going to make the 616 her home. And I really feel that her and Strange are so integral to each other's stories.
Yep.
In this movie that I feel they developed a really believable bond by the end of the movie, because, you know, they have literally changed each other's lives and the projection of each other's lives in such a profound way.
I also like too that you talked about this was supposed to be Peter Parker, but I think Peter Parker softened Strange for this, you know?
Sure. No, they made it work, having to change it from being Peter. I'm just ecstatic that America Chavez is now in the MCU. Mm-hmm. So I think win. And I mean, we got that excellent Spider-Man movie out of it. So
everybody wins.
This has just been wins all the way down.
Yeah, this movie is a huge win for me, Chris. It's absolutely my favorite MCU movies come out in the last year or so of this phase. I know there's not been a ton in phase 4, but I think there's interesting things happening in phase 4. This is my favorite film so far. Of course, they've been really excellent things with shows going on in phase 4 in particular. Risks and non-risks. You know, we've talked about the non-risks of Falcon and Winter Soldier all the way to the risks of Loki and WandaVision and things that pay off and don't pay off. And I think the risks in this pay off. And I think, you know, weirdly, some of the weakest stuff in this is the fact that this couldn't just be a standalone Doctor Strange movie. It still has to be an MCU movie at the end of the day.
Sure.
And there's a couple things that are like direct nods, winks, or ties the MCU that they just have to do, and they right. do it. And that actually, the film suffers a little bit for that because it is so unique and so different and so kind of out of left field. And great for Strange's story, like you said, his arc. You know, we're kind of getting more of the character, and I'm so in love with this character, and I love him more and more through things like the What If episode and Doctor Strange 2, these sort of left field things that add on to the Strange we kept getting in the Avengers movies and all these side movies where he kept showing up, but he never got his second movie yet. You know, it's right. been a long time for him to get his second movie, the longest of any run of one of these characters. So I don't know what else I could ask for, you know?
Yeah, it's not a perfect movie. There are some kind of questions left, but nothing that really makes me, nothing that dampens my enjoyment of this movie. This movie is just honestly a lot of fun. It's very Raimi, and it's really very rewatchable, to be honest with you. Not a ton of MCU movies have me really just loving my rewatch of them, but this one did. And
especially in phase 4, unfortunately.
Yeah. Phase 4 has been tough on the movie front so far.
You see him once and you're like, I got that story. I enjoyed it and I'm ready to move on. Spider-Man and Doctor Strange being different. I love both of these movies so much. It really is hard to pick a favorite, but for now, I think this one's my favorite because the risks it takes, you know? And Spider-Man took risks too, but they're very calculated and they were very heartstring intentionally tied to the heartstrings, you know? This was a Doctor Strange comic book movie through and through, you know? And that's not something we always get in the MCU, you know? We usually serve the MCU first before we serve the comic book characters. And this is kind of a super nerdy MCU movie in that way. You know, it's more like you just read a one-off of a Strange series, you know? And the few things that kind of hold it back are these MCU ties. But everyone was great in it. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, all the actors honestly. Were great.
It's a pretty ensemble film, but it's cool that it does focus on the main three. Of course, Strange, Wanda, and America. But everyone else, all the supporting cast, great. Cameos, fun. Did we need them? I don't know at the end of the day. But I mean, they served the story.
If we needed them? They were
fun. They served the story. I mean, yeah. Patrick Stewart, I was freaking out, as you know. I mean, I just have so much ties.
More good came from them than bad in my estimation. You were going to have the scenes of, they were going to be held somewhere in some dimension. They were going to be held movie. By some authority. I think it's pretty, a pretty good choice to bring these characters in and kind of, you know, introduce the concept of the 616 Earth having different superheroes or different history than these other Earths, even though it shares a lot of the same people and maybe they share a similar nature, but you know, all of these events are different and these worlds are different, even if minor. And I don't know, it was fun.
You know, it's fun to say a movie was fun. That's this creative. And I think that's maybe why I like it so much, Chris. I think you hit the nail on the head where it's like, sometimes I just watch MCU movies and they're fun and that's all they are, you know? And sometimes MCU movies are creative or they're unique, like a Black Panther or something.
Yeah.
And that's really, it's a standout, but it's maybe not that fun. This is a really weird one where it's like, it's weirdly fun, but it's also weirdly serious and creative on top. Cause you see the threads of like trying new things and this sort of making a horror film in the MCU. It's never been done. I mean, we're 30 films in. What a great time to do it and give me more in the future. Like, they don't have to be that often, but it's like, this worked. And I think they should do it again. I think they will. I hope they will. It's just a pretty crazy movie that's got made. I'm just still like, how did this one get made? It's just crazy.
Well, look, demographics are changing and people are looking for the American, I guess the Western audience is looking for different, which is kind of what makes MCU movies so weird because they have such worldwide appeal. They have to appeal to the Western audience and the Eastern audience. And it's a very interesting tightrope to walk.
Yeah.
They nailed this one for me.
Yeah,
it seems they nailed it for, I know they had to change some things or cut some scenes in China, or did it even release in China? I'm not sure, but
right.
I mean, it made a ton of money, so and maybe they'll be open to taking these kind of risks in the future.
Absolutely, and I'm really looking forward to Strange's story continuing, and of course, Clea being introduced in the story because you and I are about to talk about her very soon on the show. They've shown us where they're willing to go. I think they should use Strange as an avenue to go to these places that they can't go with maybe certain characters of the MCU. And I think that's a good avenue to use him because that's what they've done in comics.
Well, yeah. And they're going to use him to open up the entire, you know, Marvel magic, you know, the magic side of Marvel, the dark side that, you know.
Yeah, just all kinds of crazy stuff.
The dark
stuff,
side of the Force, yeah. And expect... You know, expect a lot of characters soon. I think a lot of characters we have in MCP are going to be showing up in the MCU in this phase. So
yeah, I'm ready for Dormammu to come back because I mean, of course, him and Strange just have a bargain. They're both still around. That's an ever present threat between the two of them at all times. Yeah, super super fun.
Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/Fury's Finest.
Of course, guys, our painting gallery with no name has just ended, but we'll be starting a new one in the coming weeks. So that's something you're interested to learn more about on the Patreon or just, you know, participate in because you don't have to be a patron participate in that. We will have info on that soon. But, it's, you know, for everyone that submitted an entry, I want to say thank you now. Huge shout out to Dylan that we got to do this community wide event for just listeners of the podcast. You know, it's not a patron thing. It's just it's anyone who's willing to put their work out there, which is not easy to do.
MCP community-wide event. Extremely cool. You know, big ups to Dylan. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Of course, you can follow our show on social media. You can find us on Twitter @Fury's Finest Cast and Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch at Fury's Finest. Email us at furiesfinest@gmail.com with any inquiries, ideas, or collaborations, and leave us reviews on your podcast platform of choice. It really helps us out. If you like this MCU content, definitely listen to it and send it to your friends and family that might not play MCP, but they keep up with the MCU. And we would really appreciate that because it seems like you guys like this stuff and it'd be cool to get other people into MCP. So use these MCU episodes as a gateway to get them to listen to some MCP content as well.
That's Jesse, folks. First hit's always free. Thanks to Approaching Nirvana for our intro and outro music and help spread the word about our show. Rate, review, and subscribe. And like I say every week, guys, it really does mean a lot and it really does help. It's not just a thing we have to say. It's 100% true. And thank you to every one of you that have done anything at all.
Yeah. And we're not joking when we say like it helps us out a lot and it helps the community a lot because as the spiel I just gave, I mean, my goal is to get people into this game we love so much and to have people enjoy the MCU and the comics as much as Chris and I do. And, in ways that, you know, they might not have experienced before, you know, hopefully we can add some positive insight on things. And when you guys spread the news of the show, that really helps us achieve that goal. Of course, you can find Chris and I on social media. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jesse Aiken. Chris, where can everyone find you? You
can find me on Twitter at Chris Bruffett, 2 F's and 2 T's. Very excited about the NBA.
Of course. Well, this was a really fun episode of the MCU. I'm happy to return very soon with some Moon Knight content, with some Thor, Love and Thunder content. There's a lot of good stuff on the horizon that we're going to talk about on the show. So until then, stay tuned. Make sure you're subscribed and you can listen to those MCU episodes. But we got a lot of MCP on the horizon as well, a lot. So until next time, thanks for listening, true believers.
Excelsior.
Has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.